Leaders are all around us at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Dr. Regan Ramsauer, Senior Vice President for Operations and Chief Financial Officer for Baylor University. Hosting the conversation is Joe Riley, President of KWBU. This conversation was recorded November 13, 2014.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley, talking today with Dr. Regan Ramsauer. And I think most of our listeners, Regan, know you as Baylor's CFO, but you've got a whole lot more connection to the community than just that. And I think we'd like to get into that and get to know you a little bit today as we talk, but welcome.
Looking forward to it, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You did not grow up in Waco.
I did not. I was born and raised in Plainview, Texas, and came here and went to Baylor as an undergraduate and completed that degree, then started working on a master's degree in economics, and I had a number of opportunities, but I grew up in Plainview.
In Plainview, who influenced you when you were growing up?
Well, you know, I think of course, my father influenced me a great deal. He was a private businessman and built ready-built houses, and then we ran a radio TV store, so sold TVs. I know how to change tubes in TVs to fix your TV set, and then we started a furniture store, and we have a furniture store in Plainview to this day, and my oldest son is now running that furniture store in Plainview, Texas.
Mm-hmm. But you came to Baylor. Now, you didn't come to Baylor by accident.
No, I did not. I did not. We have a long – there was really no other place for me to go except Baylor. My great grandmother was among some of the first classes of women that attended Baylor in Waco. And my mother attended Baylor. My father attended Baylor. My grandmother and grandparents grandfather both attended Baylor. And my sons and my family. So long, we're first family of Baylor, long history of Baylor folks. And we've always, we're green and gold. Mm-hmm. And strong connection to Baylor as I was growing up in West Texas. It was always where I was planned to go. Never thought anything different. That was mm-hmm. It was just my destiny. So
you came to Waco. You came to Waco to come to Baylor.
I did. Came to work, and you know, from the flat, dusty plains of windy plains of West Texas, and there were trees and water, and I was sure I'd died, gone to heaven. So it was a beautiful place, and thought this is where I want to be now.
Mm-hmm. And you've stayed. I mean, except when you went off to get your PhD.
Yeah. After working on my master's degree in economics, I had, in fact, part of while I was working on a master's degree in economics, I got introduced to one of the first computers at Baylor, one of the first computers anywhere, an old IBM 1620. And Helen Ligon, who also later in life is probably my most important mentor in terms of developing me. Dr. Ligon and Helen taught me how to program computers. And so I learned a little Fortran programming and actually had an aptitude for it. And Dr. Jim Truitt, who was the head of the economics department at that point, told me that he had a book. It had a multiple regression program in it that was written in Fortran, and he thought I ought to put that on the computer, and I did that. And to my knowledge, I was the first person anywhere around that had done a multiple regression program. And so instantly I had some level of notoriety as being someone who could program computers and doing that, and I thought that was a whole lot easier to do to get that notoriety in doing computers than it was in economics, which I knew would be really hard. So I took the easy way out and started working with computers and got very involved and had an opportunity to teach for a couple of years as a lecturer, teaching both computer classes as well as statistics classes. And then Baylor approached me. The chairman of the department at the time, Dr. Ray Reed, approached me and said, "Regan, if you'll go off and get a PhD, in this new emerging field of information systems, of computer systems, and come back and teach. I think we can get some money supplied by a couple of forces, a Ben Williams scholarship as well as a BGCT scholarship to help underwrite your cost while you go off and do that. And it was clear to me that the Lord had opened a very important door in my life. I stepped through that door. At the time, one of the leading universities in information systems, still is the leading information university in information systems in my mind, is the University of Minnesota. So I went to Minnesota and enjoyed my time there, came back, and a newly minted PhD, and it moved into the management department. Subsequently, we split off and formed the ISY department, or the Information Systems Department. I later became chair of that. But except for that stint in the University of Minnesota, which was a wonderful time, yes, I've been in Waco for more than 35 years now.
Now, you've given us a pretty good condensation there of a number of years. There. I want to back up just a second maybe give any listeners who might have, you know, the kind of get to know you game that you play.
Sure.
What is it about so and so that you'd be least likely to know? And this is something that I just ran across while I was reading online. When you first came to Baylor, it was in the Vietnam War era and the time of the peace movements, and you were involved.
I was involved. If my hair was rather long, I think Ray Reed, Dr. Reed, had always told me, he said, I wanted somebody really different, is why that he approached me with an opportunity to go off and get that PhD. I was active in the peace movement. I was an MC in one of the first peace rallies, to my knowledge, that we had at Baylor University on the steps of the Carroll Science Building. And, the draft was still active. My number came up. I was number 76 mm-hmm. in the draft. They were easily blowing through 76 at that time. I went and had a physical and was called up, and I was waiting my final reporting duties, and I remember it well. I was married at the time, and my wonderful wife, Glenda, and we were in our apartment, and the news came on, and Nixon called a halt to the draft, mm-hmm. and that obviously was a huge change in my life, because it was about to go one direction and now I was able to go a different direction. And it was really subsequent to that some of the stuff that I just related in terms of my graduate program took off.
Mm-hmm. You can never tell what's going to happen.
You never know. You never know. That the Lord works in very mysterious ways in lives, and obviously it makes changes, and you just keep your knees bent and take the next step.
Mm-hmm. Back at Baylor, after your PhD, you were, as you said, you were a professor at Handkammer. You were chair – now, the Department of Information Systems, is that
– That's right. That's right.
So you were chair of that department.
The three-letter moniker, which we use a lot at Baylor, was ISY, but it was essentially Information Systems. My degree was in Management Information Systems, a fledgling discipline. Had a number of different names, but information technology, computers as they are applied primarily in the business application, but could also be a not-for-profit application, but sort of applied computer technology, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You became associate dean of Handkammer?
I was associate dean, involved with the technology in Handkammer, the labs, but also with teaching and learning systems and working to get other my colleagues comfortable with using technology in the classroom and in the studies and integrated as part of education.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I guess it was a sort of a natural move for you to move from there, chief information officer at the university and dean of the libraries.
Yeah, I think that it was the dean of libraries probably is not as logical as one might think. The progression to the opportunity presented itself to start managing technology for the entire university and in a position that was referred to as the chief information officer, a CIO. That was a emerging title for folks who were managing computer technology. And so I became the chief information officer in about 2000. And great opportunity, really fortunate time in my life. Interestingly enough, 2 years later, the university had been searching for a dean of libraries. And given my background in sort of the larger field of information systems, which I considered to be the management of knowledge regardless of the format of the form that it was in, or the management of information regardless of format, it seemed to me that there was a connection between libraries and university and technology, and that the two were intertwined and connected. So I went in and discussed that idea with then President Robert Sloan, and he had hired a consultant who they had been working with in terms of searching for a dean of libraries. And he was surprised. He sat back and he told me, he said, that's exactly what the consultant has been telling me. And so I was given that opportunity. I did a speech, a preparation, a question and answer for the faculty in the school of in the libraries, and they voted for me and favorably to be dean, and I took over. And that also was a very wonderful time in my life, and a great opportunity to understand how that technology develops. And then Dean Patty Orr, who holds that same title as I did then, came in a number of years later, and we continued Baylor to operate with a merged position of both Chief Information Officer as well as Dean of Libraries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, actually, we'll get to it in a little bit. We've seen fruits of that, and that where that information, that yeah. IT is going, and how big a role that plays right now. For those who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley, talking today with Dr. Reagan Ramsauer, CFO for Baylor University. Here's a quote. Now, this goes back some time, more than 15 years, from you. You said, technology has changed the way that people are learning and the way that we're interacting, and even to some degree the relationships that we have with each other. Has that changed since you made that statement?
Well, no, I haven't heard that quote, but as you read it to me, it sounds like I was pretty smart back then. So it was interesting because so much of the social media and the changing of relationships that I mentioned were not present, I don't think, 15 years ago. And even today, for me, I feel a bit of now a fish out of water in that whole social media presence. That's not an area. And it's technology changes so quickly. But I can see it in my grandchildren. With my five grandchildren and the way they use and are already interacting with technology and their involvement. And it's just it's certainly not high tech or new tech to some degree to my own children and not to my grandchildren. It's as known to them as the TV or the radio or an automobile. It's just, of course, we have this, and this of course we interact in these ways, and the media that the different forms of that media and the way that we now relate to each other. I'm always amused by people who will send a text to somebody that's sitting right next to mm-hmm. them, or it's always amazing.
It's been known to happen in my house, so I understand. Here's another quote from you from the same time. Many people lament that what is lost in the environment is the time to reflect and the time to debate and discuss and take deliberate steps as opposed to just almost getting caught up in the wave.
I feel that probably today as more so even than then. I think at the time that I probably said that, we were very much the phrase in vogue at the time was high tech, high touch, and the need to keep the high touch aspect of our lives and not overly consumed with technology. And I don't think we have managed to do that very well. I think we just the fact that we're texting people sitting next to us indicates, you know, it's a little dominant in our lives now, technology. And I still think the touch is so vital and so important. And I do think that, for instance, for Baylor University to be a residential college, a place where 18 to 26-year-old students come and stay and are immersed in the study environment, not only is that part and parcel of what we are today, I think that's part and parcel of what we'll be in 50 years, because we will never lose that need and that desire for people to be able to take that time in their lives and be immersed in a university environment that, of course, has technology, but it also has the face-to-face, touch, the presence of people in it. And I think the hyper-connectedness of today in our world produces strange outcomes, and I still feel that way. That touch and managing that hyper connectedness could not be more important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Taking that time, and things are changing very quickly. And if we just look at the last couple of years here at Baylor,
yes,
things have changed a lot, and it's actually been a couple of good years for Baylor in the last couple of years.
It's been wonderful. I mean, I don't think that Baylor has ever been stronger in so many ways, both brand-wise and known across the nation in our academic reputation. Of course, athletics, as we sit thinking about being in a Final Four and maybe even playing for a national championship a month from now, there's just an exciting time to be a Baylor Bear, and it's a wonderful. It's interesting to reflect. There are thousands of causes that made that in people and opportunities that have been taken advantage of to put us in the position where we are today. But through it all, there is no grand planner. There is just the way the university has been able to move forward in a solid team fashion, everybody pulling on the same end of the rope. And it's been remarkable to behold and a real blessing to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned athletics. And that's the first thing that will come to my mind too. But as you were talking, I thought, the BRIC has, you know, all the things that have happened in the last couple of years. Not all of it has been on the athletic side or from the athletic side.
Oh no.
But there has been a lot of change, and I don't think we can talk about this without bringing up the stadium, which happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, the stadium certainly did, and I'm glad you did mention the BRIC as well as, you know, both our new residential living facilities, and of course we're under construction in a great new academic facility in the Paul L. Foster Campus for Business and Innovation. The stadium is a fascinating story. There were some people Drayton McLean had the president and others that went to Kansas City in the summer of 2011. But I was, you know, not, we just simply, it wasn't materializing. It wasn't, and it didn't, I'm not, I wasn't that sold on it, and it certainly didn't seem to make much sense. But Baylor football kept winning and kept doing good. And in the fall of 2011, we you know, suddenly Baylor could play with other teams. In each game, we had an opportunity to win. And for as far back as I can remember until 1974, and I was it was the year I graduated, so I remember that. But until, you know, those eras, we most of the time we didn't have that opportunity. And I do remember, I mean, people have asked me, they said, does it really happen? And it absolutely really happened that in that fall of 2011 when we played Oklahoma, and Robert Griffin III threw that touchdown pass in the final seconds of that game. And we were screaming and yelling in the stadium and celebrating. And I had been Brian Nicholson, who is was vice president for operations and facilities at the university, sent me a text and said, well, that just cost $250 million. And he really did. And I wrote back and I said, you know, it very well might have. But at that point, we began to – we really, to quote Grant Taft, we began to really believe that something like that was possible. So as we prepared going to the Alamo Bowl, we found out we were going to the Alamo Bowl, and we started putting together preparations for fundraising and getting together a group of folks, a large group of folks who could perhaps make a difference in making the stadium reality. And we won the Heisman Trophy, and who could have ever predicted that? Each little piece just kept falling into place. Several months after that, Drayton McLean made a commitment, his commitment, which kicked the fundraising off. We developed the concept of having founder suites, so our founders are literally – we could not have done it without those founders. They are the cornerstone of making it possible. And one by one, we'd make presentations, and they, we would see founders, and they began to make indications of commitment. And then we designed the suites, and then we talked to people about that. And mind you, I mean, when the time we were doing this, I mean, it was a swamp over there. Mm-hmm. We weren't doing anything. Mm-hmm. We were just trying to see if we could find the money to make it happen. And the final piece that made it an absolute reality was when the TIF board and then subsequently the Waco City Council and with the backing of the other members who are on the TIF and that money, both MCC as well as McLennan County, came together and made a $35 million commitment. Mm-hmm. And that's huge. That for a community like Waco, for a community of any community to make a commitment to a private university in and of itself is if not unique, I don't know of other places where that's happened. And then for a community the size of Waco, and again, it's not a general budget. These were dollars that had been saved for many years in order to do downtown development. And I think, you know, telling folks this is what you need on the river to develop the river.
But based on a belief that this is going to be good, not just for Baylor, but for the entire
community. A community event center where the whole community can come and be a part of it and where we do events for the entire community, absolutely. And then that was so successful that we not only paid for the fundraising that we need for the stadium, but then we were able to give people premium seat locations if they would contribute to the business school and the President Scholarship Campaign, and we completed those efforts through that same initial effort. But that second, that catch when Terrence Williams caught that pass from RG3 in the Oklahoma game.
That was it.
In my mind, that started that two-year period you're talking about. That was it.
And what a amazing. Fast change. For those just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Joe Riley talking with Dr. Reagan Ramsauer, CFO for Baylor. And very briefly, I don't want to run out of time. I know these conversations go quickly, but you're not just the CFO for Baylor, but you're a private businessman as well.
I am. I have always one of the nice things about working in the business school is that we've always had an opportunity to not only teach but to also be a leader in business. And so I have been involved in my Higginbotham family. That was the Higginbotham opportunity in that business starting about 1999. We had lumber yards all over Central Texas and West Texas, and I sold. We worked with a company, and we sold those to a cousin, and we were left with some small funeral homes. And I got in the funeral home business. Mm-hmm. And one of my colleagues in information systems department at Baylor was Dr. Jim Moshinsky. I was sitting around eating supper with him one time on a conference trip, and I started talking about funeral homes, and he couldn't believe it because he said, "Oh my gosh, that is my profession. That's what mm-hmm. I love to do." And I didn't know that about him. So he and I formed a partnership that has lasted this day with the company, and we run 3 funeral homes now in Waco, and 7 other ones elsewhere.
So. Very regulated industry.
It is. It is.
How do you have time to do that? And I would think just being CFO of Baylor would take up pretty much all your time.
Well, it does. It does. So I work in the middle of the night on that one. No, seriously. The day-to-day, the operational part, I'm not involved with. Mm-hmm. My son has gotten involved with. Glenda, my wife, is involved as the office manager over at Oak Crest. My son is the funeral director at Grace Gardens. But I don't really have any day-to-day operations, so I'm as chairman and CEO. I do the board meetings, and occasionally there's opportunities that arise, and I work to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. You serve on the Waco Downtown Development Corporation board. Got a couple of minutes left, and I hope we have enough time just to talk about your thoughts on that. I know you can come at it as a private businessman, but also certainly how Baylor is involved and what's happening with the revitalization of downtown Waco.
Yeah, I was the inaugural president of that corporation. Very honored to have that position, and advocated then and continue to be, I hope the number one cheerleader or among the top cheerleaders, advocating downtown Waco and the revitalization and of the river. And I think the stadium has played a magnificent part in that. I think just if you go to the game and I had no idea. I mean, I knew this was going to be important. I had no idea we could transform the river the way it's being transformed with the boats and the activity and the things going on, and you're looking at the development. I think we have real opportunities going forward on the river. To see further development, and I'm absolutely convinced that this is just the tip of the iceberg, and that stadium is a really fine tip mm-hmm. for the iceberg and a great calling card on I-35 with 45 million people a year. But we're just getting started as we're going to be one of the destination cities in the state and in this region for the development that we're going to see along the river. I'm mm-hmm. convinced of it.
Very briefly to wrap up, what do you see for the future?
Just wonderful things. I mean, I think that not only for the university but for the city and the community, this is a time that holds more promise than I've seen in any time during my 35 years, and I think that's shared by a lot of people. I mean, the shared enthusiasm and interest is fascinating, and I think the future is so bright for all of us, and I'm very blessed to have the opportunity to work with so many great people and helping to co-create that future.
Yes, well, we're glad to be here and part of this, the part of the community, part of the Baylor community.
Absolutely.
And the Waco community. Reagan Ransauer, just want to thank you for coming and sharing a little bit about yourself today and taking time for us to get to know you a little bit.
Thanks, Joe. I really enjoyed it, enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very much.
This conversation was recorded November 13th, 2014.